Talk Central is brought to you by BlackBerry.
Hi, this is Diplo. I'm just out there mixing ideas and mixing up different genres. I can't believe that people are actually paying me to travel across the world and build new sounds, different artists. The BlackBerry Torch makes it simple because I'm always staying in touch with everybody, whether it's using Twitter applications or Facebook. A lot of these guys, I have a closer relationship now because I'm constantly on BBM talking to them.
Pop.
I love what I do. And a BlackBerry Torch helps me do it.
Welcome to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. I'm Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Candace Jones. Hi, Candace.
Hey, Duncan.
So one big story really dominated this last week, the news of a new South Africa's first, really, FTTH operator, fiber to the home operator. Very exciting development.
Indeed it is.
A company called i3 Africa, which is backed by various shareholders, including two of the current non-executive directors of Broadband Infraco, Cornelis Grusbeek, who used to work at the Department of Public Enterprises, and Andrew Mtembu, who has been in the telecommunications game for quite some time, was previously at Vodacom, amongst other places. They've appointed Merrill Lynch to advise them and seek capital funding for a project which they believe is going to cost in the region of 5 to 6 billion rand to roll out fiber to 2.5 million South African homes over the next 4 to 5 years. And I think this arguably is one of the biggest stories in the telecommunications industry in South Africa in decades.
Well, absolutely. I think this could revolutionize the telecommunications industry here and obviously pose a serious competition to the likes of Neotel and to Telkom, which I know Neotel has been talking about, or at least thinking about doing a fiber to the home project for quite some time, but this will definitely rival the likes of ADSL from Telkom.
Oh yes.
And provide speeds of you got the speed listings there.
Yeah, well, they're talking about a minimum speed, starting point speed, baseline speed is the term they used, of 100 megabits per second, going all the way up to a gigabit a second. Now these are the sort of speeds we're seeing in fiber to the home projects in places like Scandinavia and some parts of Asia. Like South Korea, for example, and it's quite amazing. I mean, you speak to both of us have spoken to a multitude of operators over the years, and they've all insisted that because South Africa's population and cities are so spread out, it doesn't make financial sense to do an FTTH project. But these guys reckon they've got a technology which is going to allow them to do it at a third to half the cost of traditional FTTH vendors. And so that they said to reach 2.5 million houses using traditional technologies would have cost in the region of 15 billion rand, and they're talking of doing it in the region of 5 to 6 billion rand.
That's the third of the cost. I understand that they're going through the sewer systems.
That's right, which has already prompted a lot of jokes about crap internet service and all the rest of it, but I suppose that's inevitable. They're using a technology from a company called i3 Group, which is based in the UK, and this company isn't without controversy, and we're going to get onto that in a moment. But i3 Group has been involved in a number of these projects. Now, apparently while they have rolled out networks, they're getting out of that game entirely, and they're just going to be a technology supplier of these FTTH products. Now, they claim they've got they've got this patented technology which is going to allow them to do these projects at a significantly reduced cost. It involves, well, certainly the i3 Africa project is going to involve rolling out fiber rings around the cities through the sewage system, and then bringing that into people's homes. First of all, through the sewage system to provide the fiber rings, and then they're going to use a micro trenching technology, which is basically a cutter which they mount on the front of a tractor, which then digs a small 50 millimeter wide hole and 200 millimeter deep hole through suburban streets or suburban blocks. They then cut bring those out of those trenches and into the water reticulation or water supply system into people's homes. So they literally cut a portion of the water pipe as it comes into your house, feed it through your water supply, and then it comes in through, or rather at the street level. They cut a small portion, then feed it into the water system into your house, then bring it out just before the valve outside your house, and then feed the fiber into your home. Now, they claim they're going to be able to do this, and they're still in the testing process, but they think they're going to be able to do a house in 30 minutes. So bring the fiber in and have it wired up within 30 minutes. Now, that sounds very aggressive.
Obviously, with the rings in place already. And,
oh, of course, yeah.
And the street level stuff in place already.
Once that's all done, absolutely. So they'll do the fiber rings first, and they'll do the micro trenching in the suburban streets, and then they'll run the fiber into your home through your water system. Now, they claim this is going to save enormous costs because they say that the civil works, there's no actual real trenching that has to take place, except the micro trenching, which takes place on the suburban blocks, because they're using existing sewage infrastructure and existing piping and water infrastructure. They say that they can do it at reduced cost. I've already spoken to experts in this field who have questioned this, but I mean, we were chatting, Candace, to Coral Pino at MTN just before their results presentation. Coral Pino, of course, is the managing director of MTN South Africa. And he expressed some degree of skepticism about this project, saying he's looked at FTTH in South Africa and doesn't believe the business model works. He thinks it's very exciting that these guys are talking about this, because just the fact that people are talking about it and talking about investment and trying to raise investment is going to get the market interested, and we may start to see some FTTH investments from other companies as well.
Well, the likes of Telkom and Neotel are likely to jump on the bandwagon if they believe that the case is worthwhile. Mm. And it's definitely going to drive some sort of competition, or at least some increase or focus on the fixed line connectivity in the country.
And it's about time. I mean, Telkom's copper cable network is really aging. It's being stolen faster than they can put it
aging,
in the ground.
Aged.
It's aged. I mean, our line here at Tech Central, for example, can only handle 3 megabits a second because the copper in the ground. We're literally 30 meters from Telkom's backhaul fiber here, but we can only get 3 megabits per second because the copper running out of the premises here into the junction box on the corner, just around the corner here, is poor quality. So I think there'd certainly be demand for FTTH services if they're well priced, and i3 Africa is talking about pricing them comparatively well or in line with ADSL prices.
I mean,
which they'd have to
just,
do.
That would just blow ADSL out of the water.
Yeah.
You can't compare. I mean, Telkom can never put that kind of speed through the copper cable.
Mm.
And it's just, if you're looking at 100 megabits per second versus a 10 megabit per second ADSL line that's capped and shaped. I don't know.
Yeah. So it's fantastic news, and I really personally hope that they succeed and they get the funding and they're able to do this and they're able to get very rich out of it.
But there are some questions around the i3 group.
There are indeed. There are a lot of questions here. I mean, there's a lot of skepticism about whether they can get this right. These guys are pretty confident that they can. So I think there's going to be a lot of interrogation of the business model going forward. There's no doubt that Merrill Lynch, if it finds capital providers for this project, are going to interrogate the costing models very carefully. Although that said, i3 Africa is going to be running a pilot project in Durban over the next couple of months in a suburb called Somerset Park, which is just south, I understand it, of Mhlanga, on the north coast, just north of Durban. So they're going to be rolling out a test project to 100 premises there, 80 homes, and basically trying to prove the case that they can install homes in 30 minutes, and just look at all the complexities and difficulties that might be involved in a project like this.
Sounds like a good start. But
yeah. And then if the trial is successful, which they believe it's going to be, then they're going to roll out the first network in Durban involving up to 10,000 kilometers of last mile cable, fiber cable. So it's a big project. And they're keen to work with the municipalities. They're already working. They have won or are about to win a contract from the Etegwini municipality to provide fiber to libraries and schools, etc., as an extension of Durban's existing fiber infrastructure. I think it's called the Metro Connect network. And they're keen to work with other municipalities on these sort of projects. It's fantastic news. But as you say, Candace, there are some caveats here and some reasons for concern. i3 Group has been involved in some controversy in some of the networks it's rolled out, particularly a network down in Brisbane in Australia, which has just been cancelled. The city government there has pulled the plug on that contract. And
to be fair, it wasn't i3 Africa Group in its own stead. It was a subsidiary of the company H2O Networks. Or have I got it the wrong way around?
H2O Networks, as I understand it, is a subsidiary of the i3 group.
Yes.
So it is effectively the i3 group that was responsible for that project.
Yes.
Now, I understand from Cornelis Groesbeek, who's this newly appointed CEO of i3 Africa, that i3 group has decided not to be involved in these projects anymore and just to be a technology supplier to operators, which is probably a good thing, because they've been accused in some UK cities, I think in Bournemouth and one other place, I think maybe somewhere in Scotland, they've been accused of damaging the sewage reticulation networks in those cities, which is, you know, not what we want here, obviously.
No.
I mean, we've got enough problems with infrastructure as it is without third-party service provider breaking water pipes and stuff. So there's a lot of caution here, and I think a lot of questions are going to be asked, and rightfully so.
Absolutely.
I think this whole business model needs to be interrogated very carefully.
But at the same time, I don't think we should shy away from it. I think this could be a completely revolutionary process for the country and bring access to people that need access.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I would have expected, you mentioned Neotel and Telkom, I would have expected those two companies to have been more aggressive in the space, at least rolling out fiber in some areas, but they haven't done it at all, except in a couple of wealthy closed community, you know, estates.
Estates and mostly office parks.
Yeah.
I know that's the focus for Neotel.
Yes.
I'm not even sure that Telkom has actually got that far.
Yeah, I think they'd also have a couple of projects on the go, but nothing of anything of the scale that i3 Africa is talking about here. But a very interesting project, and it'll, you know, I think Merrill Lynch is going to start actively looking for funders towards mid-year once the pilot project has gotten off the ground. So we'll get a better idea by then of whether they're going to be able to raise the capital funding for this. But, you know, I'd almost argue that maybe they should be given access to things like the Universal Service Fund and some of those, some of that money to do this sort of thing, because this is a project of key national importance and would have an amazing economic spin-off if they were to go ahead with it.
Well, I think that may actually just happen. I know that the Department of Communications this morning revealed to Parliament their strategic plan to 2014, and part of that is making these kinds of incentives available to operators who are willing to roll out new infrastructure. So perhaps that this will be one of the guys who will be incentivized.
Yeah. Well, it's very exciting. I mean, we here at Tech Central, we'll be one of the first consumers of this product. I mean, we've got so many ideas of what we can do in terms of multimedia with a synchronous high-speed fiber connection. I mean,
can you imagine?
Just be great stuff. I mean, you can watch Candace and I all day long in high definition. I think people
watch us working, asking our hard questions to the right people.
I'm not sure anyone would pay for that.
It's worth a shot.
There are a lot of opportunities there. I mean, we've seen what Leah Laporte, and anyone who doesn't know the Leah Laporte show, if you go to it's twit.tv, I think.
Twit.tv.
Yeah, he does 10 or 12 hours a day of live video interviews and podcasting and stuff.
Has in fact interviewed our very own Simon Dingle.
Yeah, Simon Dingle from our sister podcast, the ZA Tech Show. If you haven't heard that, go to the ZA Tech, or go to zatech.co.za and take a listen to that. But yeah, Leah Laporte's done some amazing stuff with fiber connectivity, and I'm sure those sort of business models would apply here, and certainly Tech Central, and I know some of the other technology websites in South Africa would be very keen to look at the sort of high def of opportunities around fiber connectivity. So all I can say is let's hope to hell it happens.
Indeed.
Good. Candace, there's been a few other developments this week, not least of which was the MTN results. Very interesting. A packed auditorium at the MTN headquarters.
Yes.
At the Innovation Center.
Busier than usual.
Busier than usual. They had overflow rooms because the main auditorium, which is really quite big, was full. And a good set of results from MTN.
Sterling.
The last set of results put out overseen by Phuthuma Nhleko, the outgoing CEO. I had the opportunity to chat with him Thursday morning, about the results and about his future plans, and I think we're going to see him turn up again. Cyril Ramaphosa, the chairman of MTN, had some very, very kind words to say about him, and he's really done an amazing job. I mean, he's taken this company from a couple of billion market cap and turned it into a company, I think, at its peak, at a market cap of over a quarter of a trillion rand.
Well, if you look, 2005, the MTN had a presence of 11 countries. Last year, 21 countries.
21, and it would have been more if they'd pulled off a couple of those deals they were trying to negotiate.
But he's always been a cautious man, and he's approached the business with an absolute solid mind, and just really worked it to be what it is, and it is really a great company.
Yeah. So Sifiso Dabengwa has been appointed as the new group CEO of MTN, and not a lot known about him. He's a very quiet sort of person, media shy.
Very much like Pitumo, actually.
Yeah, I guess actually Pitumo's changed. I think he's improved over the last couple of years in terms of his access to the media, and I think it may have happened as a result of his experience of the Indian media and realizing that that the South African media are perhaps not nearly as aggressive as the journalists from India. When he was negotiating the Bharti Airtel transaction, which fell through, he actually mentioned to me that he's got more respect for us chaps here in South Africa now that he's had to deal with the Indian journalists. And I was chatting to Bridget Bengu, who is the communications manager for MTN in South Africa, and she was saying that communications team was working up here at 4 o'clock in the morning, Indian journalists calling in, they've heard some rumor about something and they need to find out right now if it's true or not. So interesting stuff. And Pitumo says he's been appointed to two very important board positions. He's been appointed as the non-executive as a non-executive director on the board of BP PLC, listed on the London Stock Exchange, and also just the other day appointed as a non-executive director of Anglo American PLC, also a South African linked company, also listed on the LSE. And of course, he's going to be chairman of MTN International, which is this new structure which is being created within the MTN group to look after all of its interests outside of South Africa. Now, there's been a lot of speculation about whether MTN is going to move to Dubai or not. They've already got a lot of support personnel on the ground in Dubai, and there's been talk that perhaps MTN will establish its head office in Dubai and effectively not be a South African company anymore. But I asked Nhleko specifically about that, and he said that that's nonsense, and that MTN will remain a South African company, although there's a possibility they may seek a dual listing elsewhere in the world, possibly in Dubai, although that hasn't been actively discussed.
But then they would list MTN International and not MTN Group.
That would be MTN International, absolutely. The primary and the main listing would remain here in Johannesburg. But he did point out, and rightly so, I think, that most of MTN's profits and turnover now come from outside South Africa. I mean, their Nigerian operation is significantly bigger than their South African operation, and absolutely, significantly more profitable.
And Iran is heading that way as well.
Iran is getting that way, although I think the margins there are a bit thinner than in Nigeria. But it's made sense for them to be in Dubai because they've got to service a lot of markets up there. They've got a number of operations in the Middle East in places like Syria and Afghanistan and Iran and Sudan, and there's an arc, what Pitumo described to me as an arc of countries which they service from that region. Which to be fair, you can't really service from South Africa because you'd be always sitting on an airplane.
Absolutely, and I think that having an office closer, or having a head office closer to the action, so to speak, Nigeria and Iran, and Dubai lands squarely sort of in the perfect place for them to be doing that, not only because of the proximity to those big countries and revenue generating countries, but also because of the tax incentives and the tax breaks that the Dubai government offers businesses. So it makes a lot of sense for them to do that, and you're right, the MTN does produce most of its revenue outside of South Africa now,
yes,
which is which is a fantastic success story for a South African company.
It's an amazing success story. I mean, Pitumo is quite keen to point out that MTN is now the highest capped market cap company on the JSE that doesn't have a dual listing in London. So if you exclude companies like SAB and BHP Billiton and Anglo American, MTN is the most is most valuable company on the JSE that's only listed on the JSE,
which is fantastic,
which is incredible. I mean, what he's done there, and he really has. I mean, sure, Vodacom was precluded from going into chasing some of the operations in these markets.
Vodacom was definitely hamstrung, but yeah, MTN played its opportunities perfectly.
Yeah,
it was a gamble every time they went into a country like Nigeria, for example. I mean, most people complained and whined when they decided to buy into Nigeria, and when they now look at it, it's I think shareholders are biting their tongues, saying sorry, thank you very much.
And amazingly, the growth in Nigeria seems to be just getting started.
Market
penetration there, I think last time I looked, is around 50% of the market, so there's huge growth on the voice side. And the percentage of their revenues in Nigeria from data are less than 5%, and most of that comes from SMS.
And that's coming up now as well. So
in the broadband space in Nigeria, there's still a massive opportunity for growth.
But I think Sifiso is going to have quite some shoes to fill.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And he is a bit of an unknown quantity because of the fact that he has been so media shy and hasn't been out there, so we don't know who he is. But you talk to MTNers and they seem to respect him, and they seem to say that he's a very good, strong, operational man.
In 12 years in the business, yeah. You don't go without knowing what's going on.
And he was responsible, remember, for many years for building that Nigerian operation.
Absolutely.
So he's got a lot of strong operation. He knows the business very well.
And had some time under Putuma as a successor to really get to grips with things.
Yes.
And I have to say, during the results presentation, watching him in the beginning, you could see that he was nervous and waiting to step up to the podium. But as soon as he stood behind that podium, he was confident, he was calm, and I was impressed with his delivery to investors and to journalists during the presentation. So I think that we'll have to wait and see. But I think that perhaps he's been well groomed.
Oh, no doubt about that. he's worked very closely with Putuma for several years, so he knows how things work there.
But I'd like to just say one thing, though. The unsung hero of MTN's results this year was MTN South Africa. After 2009, when it was facing a downhill slide, margins were zero. Mm. The company was really looking unhappy and unhealthy.
Mm.
And under the leadership of Carl Pienaar, the MD, it really has come back to its own. Mm. And really, it's grown subscriber base. Yes, a lot of it is in prepaid, where they would rather have postpaid, but I think the recession has a lot to do with that. But wow, what a turnaround from 2 years ago. The company is looking shiny and sterling. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, no, they are doing well. And I think it's come on the back of the massive investment they made in their 3G network.
Absolutely.
And the infrastructure game. The fact that they did have a lot of problems around their billing systems, which have now been sorted out.
Hats off to Carl, because it really looked good.
No, they have turned it. They have turned it around there for sure. South Africa and Nigeria are really the two big stories in the latest set of financial results.
Absolutely.
For MTN. They're doing incredibly well. Let's keep an eye on how Sifiso Dabengwa does, and the share price certainly was bought up. I think it was over 5% up on the results, and Candice, I think we need to take a quick break there. We'll be back right after these messages.
The Vox Superphone and your ADSL line go together like rugby and biltong, but you're allowed to chew the fat. Now you can use your ADSL for more than just surfing. With the Superphone, you can call any phone, anywhere, using your ADSL line. You save money, earn rebates, and box-to-box calls are free. No contracts, just plug and play. Your ADSL and the Vox Superphone. It's the perfect combination. Make the most of your ADSL. Visit voxsuperphone.co.za.
After the advent of the telephone, it took mankind 70 years to invent the color television. And yet, it only took the next 23 years to invent lasers, the internet, to put a man on the moon.
Ignition sequence start.
It begs the question, what will the business world be like in the next 23 years? Wherever your business is at, Telkom Business will be there with you. Telkom Business.
Virtual Access, ECN's latest cost-saving telecom service. Virtual Access is a single 0860 number, providing your customers with national access to your company, no matter how many branches you have or where your customers are calling from. If you are currently using or plan to use an 0860 number, you need to talk to ECN. Virtual Access is the best price single national number offering in the market. For more, visit ecntelecoms.com. ECN, lowering the cost of doing business.
Welcome back to Talk Central, the business technology podcast brought to you by the editors at techcentral.co.za. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm here with Candice Jones. Candice, it's actually been quite a busy week. The Kojima story broke this week as well, and it was not good news for them. Their share price tanked after they released their results, which took a massive hit after the disclosure of the settlement agreement they reached over the Who Am I Online project for the Department of Home Affairs. Just remind us what that project was about and what the impact has been of the negotiations with the Department of Home Affairs.
So basically, the Who Am I Online project is a massive overhaul of the Department of Home Affairs core IT systems, and it includes linking systems that the police have in place, a system called Harness, and international arrivals control, so movement control within the country and between the countries around us and outside. And the actual core systems itself were supposed to link to all the branches that Home Affairs has across the country. And that sort of, it was a massive project, and the department put out a tender in 2008, and the project was won by Gejima. And at the time, there was quite a lot of scandal around the tender awarding, given that Jonas Bogoshi was then CEO and very close friend of Mavuso Masimang, who was at the time the Director General of Home Affairs, if I'm not mistaken.
I think they worked together back at the State IT Agency.
At CETA, that's correct. It wasn't Home Affairs, it was CETA.
As I recall, Jonas Bogoshi was offered the job of CEO of CETA, but he instead but he actually decided to take the Gejima job instead.
Yes. And there was a lot of scandal around it then and a lot of questions around it then, but at the time it was a 2.2 billion rand deal.
That's right.
And the costs over the years have spiraled, and by last year, the actual cost of the deal was 4.5 billion. And a lot of political parties have questioned why the price, the cost of the project spiraled so dramatically. And there were, you know, basic sort of suggestions that the rand-dollar exchange had risen the price, the interest rates had risen the price, and the cost of the technologies had increased, and so on and so forth. At the end of the day, I think, I can't be sure, but I think that Gejima bit off a little bit more than they could chew with this project. It was massive.
Mm.
Anyway, last year, the department then canned the deal, saying that the contract was invalid and that that the tender was awarded outside of the proper processes, which Gejima has fought since then, and the project has been on hold, and Gejima has been waiting and in negotiations with the department since then. It was 10 months ago, effectively.
Mm. And Gejima's share price has been really depressed ever since then. It was well over a rand and it fell back quite dramatically after that. And
if you look now, today, compared to what it was last year, this time, it's down more than half of, it's now more than half of what it was, less than half of what it was then. So, yes, the share price tanked, and it wasn't a fun time. But they did come to a settlement over the last few days, which includes shaving of 2 billion from the actual cost of the project.
And Gejima's having to write off about 375 million rand as part of this process, and that's what hit their share. That's what hit their results, their interim results for the 6 months to the end of December.
Well, headline earnings were down, I think, between 26% and 29%. I can't remember the exact.
Well, their earnings plummeted plummeted to a loss, didn't they?
Yes, they did. Mm. Their actual earnings made a net loss, and
their share price just took an absolute hit. I think it was down to 55 cents at one point. Did bounce back a little bit the next day.
And today as well.
Is it up again today?
It's up about 6% today.
Okay, so it's bouncing up a little bit, but nowhere near the levels it was before the announcement.
No.
Ernest Kaplan, one of our friends of Tech Central, who runs Kaplan Equity Analysts, is quite bullish on Gejima. He put out a research statement I saw this morning saying that this looks like a screaming buy at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's down but not out.
Mm.
You know.
And of course, the impact of Home Affairs is a once-off hit on their results.
Absolutely.
And they do have other good businesses there within the stable. So
also, having spoken to Jonas Bogoshi, the CEO, I think on Sunday evening, under embargo, he explained that the way Gejima now deals with government has been completely shifted. So the processes that Gejima has inside the business when dealing with government contracts has now been changed to monitor each and every step of the way, so that not just Gejima's legal aspects are sorted, but also that to make sure that any department that provides them with a tender or awards them a tender has gone through the proper processes to do that.
Mm.
So they're also going to act as a watchdog on the actual tender process, which I think is a good idea for any business dealing with government, because you never know when something gets slipped by the wayside.
Mm.
And I think, but I agree, I think that it is a once-off issue. I mean, government has increased its plans for IT spend this year, as per Praveen Gordhan's budget speech earlier this year. And I think that Gejima has a very good foot in the door. And I don't mean to be political, but Robert Gumede is a good friend of the ANC. And he is the chairman of Gejima as well, which, you know, gives him a little bit more sway over what kind of projects he can tender for.
Mm. Mm. Okay. Good, Candice, we're almost at 30 minutes. I want to try and keep the show under 30 minutes this week, but let's just lastly talk about Telkom. We're expecting an announcement any day now regarding a new CEO. There was a lot of speculation yesterday that Pinky Moholi, the current MD of Telkom South Africa, had been appointed to the position, but it's not confirmed. But there are three candidates we know of who are vying for the position: Peter Nelson, the former CEO, the current CEO of Danel, whose name slips my mind at the moment, and Pinky Moholi. Now, my sources are saying that Pinky Moholi is in the lead here to take over the position, but we don't know yet. I think the market would generally welcome Moholi's appointment to the position.
Absolutely. Industry players are saying, you know, she knows the business, she knows the ins and outs of the industry. I agree. I think she'd be a great CEO. Yeah,
and Telkom is a complex beast. You'd actually need someone who knows how it works. You don't want someone to have to come in there and spend the first year or two just figuring out basically what the politics are and how the technology works and
Absolutely.
What the competitive dynamics are and all that.
Although
sort of
she did that in the banking industry and turned Nedbank into something wonderful.
Well, to be fair, she was there as marketing director, not running the company.
But she did bring into a customer focus, which I think they needed at the time.
Mm. Fair enough. But maybe even by the time this podcast is uploaded, these companies have a tendency to put out these statements at 5:30 on Friday afternoon. So we'll be keeping an eye on SENS this afternoon to see if there is a statement. But
I think it's just to drive us journalists up the wall.
Yeah, probably.
Just crack that beer.
Yeah. too often have I been easing my way into the weekend and some major announcement comes out on SENS at 5:25, you know, just to ruin my Friday evening. But it might be out tonight, but... I would guess we'd hear something in the next week or so. They definitely have to make an announcement by the end of March, because that's when acting group CEO Jeffrey Hedberg steps down. Good, Candice. I think that's all for this week. We're going to be keeping a close eye on this Fiber to the Home project and i3 Africa and what they're doing. So listen out for more of that in the future. I know we promised in the last show we would have details of our first Tech Central pub quiz. We've been a bit bad at providing those details on the website this week, but we will get those up by early next week with all the details of the venue and the date and what's involved. We're creating a wiki site so that you can register for the site and create your teams. What company teams are welcome at the event. We've got some great prizes to give away from companies like Vodacom, MTN, Incredible Connection, Nashua Mobile, and others.
Start thinking up a really good team name, because the best team name will win a small prize as well. So,
good. Candice, until next week. I almost forgot. If you have any feedback on the show, you can send us an email at info@techcentral.co.za. You can even either do that or email myself directly, duncan@techcentral.co.za, or candice@techcentral.co.za. And in preparation of that pub quiz, we may be asking a couple of questions around news stories over the last few months. So maybe give Tech Central a bit of a read to brush up on your knowledge.
It's probably a good idea.
Cool.
Intent.
Right, until next time, good to chat. We'll see you then. Bye.